Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And this is More Talk Radio. And if you are listening, you are either listening on 91.9 in the Gorge, 100.7 in Willamette Valley, or 90.7 in the Portland metro area, or perhaps you are listening on the web, and we are located at www.kboo.fm. And this is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. Today is Monday morning, and, you know, I can't see what time it is. It is 7:39 and 53 seconds. We have all these high-tech clocks, but they do no good if they are blocked. But hopefully all is well this morning, and you are well as well. Let me begin this program by thanking all of you who have either pledged or are continuing members of KBOO. Over the last few weeks, KBOO has been in the midst of our spring pledge drive, and because of your continuing commitment and commitment to KBOO and to non-commercial listener-sponsored radio, we are able to continue to offer the type of programming that you will hear here and nowhere else. So for all of you who made a commitment to either join or to renew your membership in KBOO, thank you very much. And we also look forward to those of you who somehow forgot, you have the opportunity also to become a member of KBOO. Again, we want to thank all of you for participating in our spring membership drive. And we look forward to continuing to offer to you programming that expands your mind and your awareness this morning. This morning, we'll have a topic of conversation, and we'll share with that shortly. But let me remind all of you to get up. Today is Monday, and perhaps you have just starting off the new day. I think it's a good morning. So if you are on your way out of the door, on your way to a place, school, or work, this is the beginning of a new day and a new week. So look forward to a great week and all the excitement that it offers unto you. Again, this is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste, and we'll have a topic. We're going to try an experiment. We know that sometimes cell phone communications are difficult to hear and interpret over the radio, but I'm going to turn it over to my partner, Celeste, and she will offer you. Well, see, this is why cell phone communications is sometimes not so well, but we'll try it. Celeste, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How well am I coming in? The question is, am I there?
You are there, but you sound as if you are 250,000 miles away.
No, I'm not quite that fortunate. I'm not on a road trip, just merely in from an extended, early morning business. Is this any better? What is that they say? Can you hear me now?
Well, this is non-commercial radio, so we will not respond to that. But share with our listening audience some of our ideas this morning.
Well, I won't belabor anyone with trying to get the announcements out. We can handle those when I actually set foot in the studio. But the idea has been something kind of ripped from the news, you might say, but it has a larger application. Over the past few weeks, there's been some incidents and situations that have made us really seriously consider what does restoration and reconciliation mean. And with regard to not only positions of leadership, but also just within our intimate personal circles, our work circles even. I have been listening to people talk about the situation with leaders such as the president all the way down to our chief of police and how there's a lack of trust, a concern of a breach of trust, concern about what does what does it take to repair that trust? Can that trust even be reclaimed and restored? When relationships are broken asunder, what does it take to put them back together again? And so with regard to, as I said, our political leadership and both local and national, and then in terms of our personal lives, when we've either been wronged by somebody that we care about, or we've had a grievance against an employer, and we're trying to rebuild that relationship, we need to determine what are the kinds of actions, the kinds of gestures, the types of activity that can make a difference. With regard to leadership, often when trust is broken, it's hard to replace. We put a lot of stock in our leaders. We support them. We in olden days, all of the profits of the town or the village went to support leadership. Leadership was supposed to study long and hard to be able to be a just and kind and a compassionate leader, someone who was able to find the answers to deal with their governance's problems.
Okay.
We spent lots of energy making sure that the person who was going to be our leader was well-educated, well-rounded, well-grounded, well-connected.
Okay.
Because to whom much was given, much was expected. Great knowledge and great power were supposed to be used for the greater good. What happens when that's not necessarily the case? How do we as ordinary people react, respond, and rebuild?
Well, this is an interesting proposition we have to offer, and we will explore more of this in terms of restoration and reconciliation in terms of public trust and public responsibility. As a means in which to begin our conversation around public trust and reconciliation, some people are hesitant because they have some issues or concerns with our government and the role of our government and whether or not we can trust our government and how we should construct our society. So I thought as a we'll hold on to that topic just briefly, but I thought we might want to begin this conversation or begin this morning talking about public trust in a larger arena. This is, of course, the final day, I believe, for people to submit their taxes to the federal or state or county government.
And without a penalty, at least.
Without a penalty. And some people have some interesting thoughts on reformation and alternatives to that. And so joining us this morning, you know, I don't know your official position at PSR, but so I'll let you introduce yourself and your official position.
Hi, Cecil. This is Catherine Thomason. I'm with Physicians for Social Responsibility, and I'm now the president-elect for the national organization.
Oh, congratulations, Catherine.
Thank you. And the message we have this morning is the very great concern we have for what our tax dollars are buying.
Mm-hmm.
And we're buying nuclear weapons. The current administration has decided that it wants to modernize the nation's complex of laboratories and factories and to produce new nuclear bombs. Just horrible idea.
Certainly, certainly a frightening aspect. And with that idea of this administration going down this road, what are some thoughts that PSR has?
I think there are many things converging right now that really underscore how very scary this whole concept of developing new nuclear weapons is. First and foremost, of course, it costs money. $6.4 billion is accounted for this year, which is 50% greater than what was spent yearly during the Cold War, mm-hmm. just to maintain and manage our current nuclear system.
Mm-hmm.
That includes cleanup, which is a pretty hefty cost. But the most important thing, I think, is that this administration thinks that nuclear bombs are usable and that we recently did a test with about half the size explosion as a what they call a, quote, low-level nuclear weapon in the Nevada test site using just TNT, so they haven't broken the atmospheric testing ban, but to see whether or not this kind of payload would actually get to underground tunnels, which is what they potentially want to strike in Iran. A lot has been in the news recently about Iran, and commentators such as Seymour Hersh, Joe Cercioni, the executive director of my own organization, are very concerned about what this administration is talking about in terms of potentially using nuclear weapons to strike Iran at this time. Now, besides it being a devastating idea that nuclear weapons are a horrific weapon, should never be used, if at all, but certainly never used in an offensive sense, which is goes against every single treaty that we have signed. But in a real sense, there's nothing more that would make Iran want a nuclear bomb than to be threatened by one, because to own and hold a nuclear bomb in your country is a potential deterrent to keep others from hitting you with it.
So what we're speaking this morning with Catherine Thompson, physician for social responsibility, and as you mentioned, there's been much in the news recently about Iran's potential entering into the nuclear club and our nation's response to it. At the same time, you also mentioned some of the things that the United States government continues to do. Considering this horrendous situation, what can we do? What are some of the proposals that we can change the course of our nation?
Well, what we need to do is to re-ascribe to the treaty, the non-proliferation treaty that we signed before. And that says that not only will we allow countries like Iran have nuclear power in return for promising not to build new nuclear weapons, is to not threaten other countries with nuclear weapons. We need to decrease the amount of money we're spending. We need to vow not to create new nuclear weapons, which sends exactly the wrong message to these countries, such as Iran and Korea. And we need to use our dollars in a much better way to secure our country if this administration is so afraid that our country is so at risk. The way they're going about it is putting us at greater risk. Spending money on nuclear weapons makes us less secure. And by increasing the potential for plutonium and other materials such as heavily enriched uranium into the hands of others who would potentially use them. Iran isn't planning on using nuclear weapons if it gets them. Again, it's a deterrent. That by doing that, it would make us more secure, and we could spend our tax dollars on things that we need here at home.
Considering spending our tax dollars, and we mentioned that today many people are concerned around taxes and how their tax dollars are spent, and considering the concern of many people about our federal budgets and how we allocate our federal dollars, and so I suppose this is an opportune time to raise questions such as your organization is raising to the American public, and more importantly to those in government and can influence decisions. How are we able to talk to our legislators? Are they hearing what we are saying?
Well, the first thing that we can do this morning on tax day is join Physicians for Social Responsibility down at the main post office downtown, Northeast Hoyt and Broadway. And if you happen to be a health provider, wear your white coat or your uniform. But everyone is welcome to come down there between 9:30 and 11. And we'll be handing out information on where our tax dollars are going. And again, just like being here and talking about this issue on the media, the more people who know about this will become outraged that we're spending this kind of money on nuclear weapons that will make us less secure. And that's the message we need to send through the media, but also directly to our legislators. I would encourage everyone in the next day or so to call our senators who are being asked after the break to sign on to the agreement that Bush created with India. To sell them nuclear materials, nuclear knowledge in terms of power plants, in spite of getting them to sign the nonproliferation treaty, getting them to be open to inspections. Again, this completely undermines the whole system of controls and checks and balances we have in the world to control these types of weapons.
And let's remind our audience, for those of you who, you know, I think this is like one of the first time I actually filed my taxes ahead of the deadline. But for other people who will be going down and filing, PSR will have information down at the main post office in Portland. That's Broadway and Northwest Hoyt, for information about how our tax dollars are being spent. And also some recommendations about what we can do in terms of urging our representatives. You mentioned, Catherine, about the administration's new agreement with India, and certainly for many of us, it struck us as as frightening in terms of where we are going. In terms of at one time, I thought that our government was sort of like wanted everyone who possessed nuclear weapons to enter into this agreement of nonproliferation. And certainly, India and Pakistan did not, and President has a new treaty with India. Why is this so raised our eyebrows, and why we should be concerned? I suppose the administration might say, well, India is a friend and they won't do anything harmful.
Well, that's exactly it, Cecil. Our administration believes that it can determine who is good and who is bad. Nobody can determine what country is so-called good and so-called bad. Mm-hmm. If our country is the first one to use nuclear weapons, I would certainly say that our country is bad. But times change, and the treaties don't. So if countries sign on to treaties and follow them, whether the administration changes or not, we have a system in place, albeit an imperfect one, mm-hmm. which is the UN and the UN Security Council, to help manage these matters. But what's really bad about this particular program is that at the same time we're telling Iran that they cannot develop nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. And there's no urgency in that at all. All the intelligence shows us that at the earliest, Iran would be able to actually make a nuclear weapon 5 years from now. Right. Most intelligence says 10 years from now. But first, we're telling Iran you can't make nuclear weapons. But then we're turning around and embracing India and saying, India, you never signed the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty along with Pakistan and along with Israel. But in spite of that, we think you're a democratically elected government. We think you're our friend. And we want to help embrace you by helping provide you with nuclear power, mm-hmm. technology, materials, even though you still won't allow inspections into all your plants. So it's like treating one child differently than the other child, and you know how that goes mm-hmm. in a family. That yeah. doesn't work at all.
And you know, it occurs to me that this problem with India is just symptomatic of our administration, just in general, in terms of its attitude towards international agreements in general, and abiding fairly exempt, I think, from following and those type of protocols.
Yes, I think that it really shows that just as Bush has been lying and leaking secrets, and not using warrants to make unprecedented taps on American citizens, he must feel he's above the law. Mm-hmm. And he's not, and neither is the United States. And by bringing us back to the grounding of how our nation started, that we believe in the law, and that should be guiding our principles at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And when it guides our principles, we are then able to make better decisions and embrace other countries equally. Mm-hmm. Because, again, we're just rolling down this path of unprecedented terror, basically, with an increased threat of nuclear weapons.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio. We're speaking with Catherine Thomason of the Physicians for Social Responsibility. They're having an action. Is it all day, but time is?
No, it'll be between 9:30 and 11 this morning.
Oh, okay.
Actually, 9 and 11 this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Down at the main post office, Northwest Hoyt and Broadway. and we'll be... We'll be handing out information on what we're spending with our tax dollars on our nuclear weapon systems, and hopefully we'll be meeting the press down there.
Okay. I think we might have a phone call. Do you mind taking a phone call at this time for some information? Okay, good morning, caller, and thank you.
Good morning. Good morning. This doesn't go with the nuclear weapon stuff, but it does go with kind of what we're talking about with our government kind of going off, and there's a... H.R. Bill 689, and it's sponsored by Bartlett, and it's going to help nullify a recent ruling making it illegal to mention any elected official named in a campaign for federal. You cannot broadcast any ad within 60 days of an election that mentions any federal official's name. You must file a report with the government, and it is to protect the incumbent. So you can only mention the incumbent if you can pay the government tax, and it's a tax on our speech. And Congress, and it says under the First Amendment that Congress shall not make no law by abridging the freedom of speech or press. And if you can't pay your money to the government, you cannot say any incumbent's name. And Bartlett introduced this law and this amendment, and it has 54 co-sponsors, and it is H.R. 689. And this is huge. This is really big for us. This is the government closing down our freedom of speech, and that just goes with a government that's out of control with nuclear weapons and willing to shut their people up.
But thank you for your call, and part of the caller raised the issues in terms of government, in terms of responsibility. And I believe Congress is in recess this week. And so part of the things what we can do is speak to our congressional representatives. They're making town hall meetings and stuff.
Yes, I would recommend calling you when you do make your call and say, please do not sign this India agreement to both Wyden and Smith. Find out when they're doing a town hall meetings. And I believe that Representative Wu is having one today, potentially, on the environment and science.
Okay.
But they are back in the district, and you can call and meet with them. You can call the PSR office and find out when we might be meeting with our representatives based on these issues to get a better understanding. And our phone number and website is 503-274-2720. Or OregonPSR.org.
You know, we went through this whole interview without even mentioning your contact information. So, Catherine, thank you for mentioning that. So, again, could you just remind the folks about the action today and, again, about your organization and how to contact?
Yeah. Right. Our action today is to educate people on what their tax dollars are going for, particularly for these horrible nuclear weapons programs with declining amounts of money for cleanup. And the action is at Northwest Hoyt at the main post office as people are posting their tax returns today on tax day between 9:30 and 11 a.m. And come and join us to picket the area and let inform more Americans what their tax dollars are buying.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning and for relatively short notices coming down here. And anyone who can get up and be on the radio at 7:30 in the morning, I congratulate them on Monday morning.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, Cecil.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And we will return with you in a few minutes. Stay tuned. Enjoy this interlude. and you are listening
to KBOO Portland 90.7. A little interlude there from John Coltrane, and just something to kind of wake you up this morning, get you going without too much strenuous activity. After all, it is Monday. And any moment now, you need to be putting that pedal to the metal.
Metaphorically speaking.
Yeah. Right. No, yeah. If you're on the road, don't. And coming in from Gresham this morning, the last thing I would like to see is the folks pulled over to the side of the road like I did with the flashing lights. No, that's not good any time of the day, especially not at the beginning of your week.
Well, today is April 17th, we mentioned. It is tax day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a day, you know, I suppose at one time when the federal income tax came into existence in the early part of last century, people might have took it similarly to how people used to go and vote, you know, just their national patriotic duty.
With a sense of pride.
A sense of pride,
mm-hmm.
because it was that trust and relationship between those in power and those who were governed, and we
uh-huh.
were all in this together.
And you felt you had a government that was responsive and considerate and listened, you know? Maybe considerate might be stretching it a bit. But at least responsive.
Responsive.
Yeah.
We were all in this together.
Yeah, government by and for and of.
Of the people.
The people.
Now, you know, we mentioned earlier about this, you know, certainly not a new problem in terms of public trust, trust in not only government, but in public officials and the need
uh-huh.
for restoration, reconciliation, and retribution, I think is how you put it. And you wanted a broad
discussion, you know, to talk about it in very general terms. I want to kind of avoid bringing it down to specifics just because hot button item, looking at trying to come up with some solutions, at least for our personal lives and how we work things out, and that could be applied in a general sense. And also because in terms of thinking of reconciliation, restoration, to take it from the leadership all the way down to the personal aspects of it, one of the examples I had for the personal realm of reconciliation and restoration was an interesting television show that I've seen. I don't know how many of you may have caught it. I have friends and family who watch TV, and I find myself watching a little bit more than I'm used to. But some of the shows are interesting, and one of them is called Spying on Myself, Spying on My Life, you know, in which you have an opportunity through the magic and the intrusiveness of television to disguise yourself and go talk to someone with whom you have been estranged. And it's an interesting program for me in that people who have had some serious flare-ups or breakups with people that are important in their lives are taking advantage of the opportunity to go in and talk to this person under the guise of being someone totally different and elicit information and somehow get what they need to rebuild the relationship and establish trust. And, of course, when I say that, you know, I'm thinking tongue-in-cheek, yeah, I'm really going to establish trust if I have to disguise myself to talk to you. But, you know, that notwithstanding, the whole thing is this whole need to establish trust and restore relationships, both on a broad and on a very specific level.
Okay. As you mentioned, in terms of restoration, in terms of trust, and perhaps we threw out those three words, do we need any definition?
Well, retribution has the connotations of vengeance and getting even when it's not necessarily that.
Okay.
You know, it could be just kind of paying back what you owe. Restoration, restoring whatever the situation is to its former importance or stature or significance, realm.
Okay.
And then reconciliation
basically mending and repairing relationships, regardless of the type of relationship. It's restoring on in a sense, but I think in a more personal, relational aspect. Okay. You know, with regard to how we get along, we may restore someone who, say, has been in prison or who has, for whatever reason, fallen down from glory, from grace. We may restore them to their position, but as a rule, we usually reconcile our relationships. We put them back together again.
In a community where there are many diverse voices and many diverse concerns, there are oftentimes when people become separated when they have different opinions or different thoughts. And at some point in time, there becomes a breach, something happens that breaks the public trust or the covenant of among people. Now, we've seen evidence of this in several arenas. The continuing concerns around corporations such as Enron.
There
was an article in the Oregonian yesterday talking about income tax and how corporations are not paying
theirs.
Their fair share.
Mm-hmm.
There is the brouhaha in the Department of Defense where some retired generals are calling for the
ouster Rumsfeld.
I almost said elimination when I said, "Oh, hold that word." Of the Secretary of Defense, there's the continuing sense of awareness that our government was either less than truthful or less than capable in terms of getting us into the situation in Iran. And there are also in terms of local issue, in terms of public trust in city government and county government and those officials. So there are examples, many examples of the brokenness of that trust. And part of the question is what do we expect of our community, and how do we restore wholeness, or how do we find a way in which we can restore trust and accountability.
And, you know, it's not just upon us when it comes to public trust and leadership. It's not just upon us to figure out how to restore it. It's actually a great deal, I think, of the responsibility lies on the one who has broken the trust in whatever manner, to create a space for dialogue in which you can talk about what the problem is and to come up with some solutions, you know, be active in this and not passive and sitting back and waiting for people to point out how you can fix it.
As we continue our discussion, we invite you to give us a call and share your thoughts about this issue. And our phone numbers are
503-231-8187, and this is a great opportunity for you to call in. We know that you've been kind of, put on hold. You know, the phrase would be put on hold because of the pledge drive. Some people didn't get a chance to call in because of the nature of our shows. We had guests then, and it didn't really allow for much dialogue with our listeners. But this is a great time to call in. We have a topic this week. Next week, we're going to have open forum. And then the following week, we have a couple of guests. So we're back on track. But we want to encourage you to come on back and sit down at the electronic coffee table with us and have some conversation. 503-231-8187. And if you're concerned, we're going to ask you if you're a member. Nah, you're going to have amnesty.
So as our engineer line up those calls, let us continue our conversation in uh-huh. in part in terms of public trust. Certainly, there are responsibility among those who are in leadership, and that's often the question is, you know, we often hear, "Let me do my job."
Uh-huh.
And it's just my job, and you know, the commercial of a basketball player. I'm not a role model. Is that a legitimate statement? Do you think
for a sports figure? Yeah,
Okay. I can see that. I mean, there are still certain qualities we would like to think that everyone brings to whatever endeavor, you know, public or private. And so with regard to sports, we like to think that minimally you're going to be honest. You know, minimally you're going to exhibit qualities of good sportsmanship, you know. And so at least if you have those things, if you have those qualities and you exhibit them, you manifest them, that could possibly make you a role model. Now, with regard to our leaders, as I said, if you remember back in our days, let's go back into early parts of our history, we looked at our leaders as being someone who was imbued with leadership from whatever province, you know, that culture believed in. You know, it was a divine province that gave you leadership. So you were supposed to be imbued with those same qualities. Honesty, integrity, leadership, compassion, strength, knowledge, wisdom. And so consequently, it was no big stretch for a lot of people to want to support their leaders who manifested these qualities with their labor. You know, you worked hard. You gave up part of your crops. You gave up a lot of your energy to go and work for leadership because you were under the impression that this was somebody who was wise and was at least educated.
Well, and those are important qualities.
Uh-huh.
I guess another question is in terms of when I raise the issue of I'm not a role model,
mm-hmm.
is in terms of, and I read something recently, this sort of, maybe this person said, particularly men, have a way of dividing stuff. So
Compartmentalizing.
Mm-hmm. So in one sense, if I'm president of the United States and if I do my job, what I do
on my own time.
On my own time.
Is
my own time.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, leaders, we don't claim that they are infallible.
Let's hope we don't. We don't want to set ourselves up.
but all those areas and where do we make those divisions?
Well, that would be some interesting conversation, and we enjoin you to call us up and tell us where those distinctions are. 503-231-8187. We know this is coming off a pledge drive, but don't be shy. All the people who we called up and we exhorted to become members, don't forget you're also callers and listeners too.
I'm wondering because in terms of our leaders, in terms of how we hold them accountable. I've also read that some people of more conservative, ideology, it was very easy for them to become up in arm over the failed leadership of President Clinton. Sure some of it was policy driven, but some of it was also over their perceived differences in terms of personal morality. On the other hand, those same people who had a sense of moral indignation certainly have failed to raise their voices in terms of the lack of moral fortitude of this present administration who continues, some may argue, that they also commit acts of lying and dishonesty, mm-hmm. but it's more important because it manifests itself in terms of public policy,
right? You know, and flying low under the radar under the guise of preserving national security or trust.
Mm-hmm.
There's a word again, trust. And so, you know, the question would be then: is do we have conditional or situational application for how or what how we define trust and how we perceive trust to be broken and how we protest when trust is broken? I mean, it would seem so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and you painted it in terms of at least political terms in terms of kind of like a partisan dichotomy, you know, bipartisanship. It's like, well, I'm just upset because this person who is not of my party has demonstrated they have a lack of
of ethical fiber. Mm-hmm. You know, or they cannot be trusted, or they have demonstrated, and that they, being, you know, the person in the outs at the time, demonstrated that they cannot hold trust, or they don't respect trust. So that I think you pretty much summed that up. That's one of those situational things. I don't think it's, I think we should have maybe some form of universal definition of trust and expectation. But the problem is bringing everybody to the table to kind of form what that's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how, and as you said, we come out of a very diverse culture nowadays in America, and diverse expectations of what trust entails.
Coming from a diverse culture in terms of what trust entails, in terms of different expectations, so how do those of diverse understanding able to work together? Is there a way in which we can find a common definition, or a way in which something we can all agree on minimally in terms of expectations, and also in terms of accountability? I think that all of us recognize that no one's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That we all make mistakes. So I think we can all, many of us can agree on that. Part of the issue, I think, one is recognizing when we do make a mistake, perhaps, or when we break trust, and this is also, you know, public or private.
Mm-hmm.
And then what steps are necessary for the restoration, for it to take place?
Well, you know, you said it first in accountability. I think that universally we have some idea of accountability that transcends culture. You hear all the time in different countries, in different communities, how some person in a leadership position is being taken to task for not having stepped to the plate and done whatever they were supposed to be doing, or having lapse in judgment or what have you. And so, and this is something that occurs globally. It's not peculiar to one community or culture. Also, I think when we try to determine what we mean by trust, is coming up with an idea of mutual respect. We as citizens expect our leaders and the people in our lives to respect us, and that's one of the places that you can start with, trying to create that common language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when you talk about establishing a dialogue, this is where I think sometimes the part is incumbent upon, you know, the person who has broken the trust is responsible. You got to admit that you did it. You know, you have to understand what you've done, how what you've done is wrong, or how it breaks the trust. If you don't think that you've broken the trust, you operate, you know, what is that to say, business as usual?
And once, and can one admit that one has broken the trust? Let me give an example.
Okay.
We are in the midst of political campaign season here in Oregon. One campaign for an office pits an incumbent against a challenger. The incumbent, the chair of Multnomah County, one of the things that she is battling is the perceived sense of a breaking up of trust.
Uh-huh.
In terms of, one, you go back way back to around the whole issues around marriage issues and the
uh-huh.
lack of some
of transparency
involving the community. And so she has someone who's running opposing her who's raising those type of issues in terms of accountability and trust and transparency. She has said that, perhaps the process was wrong. I apologize for what I did. But yet some people says that is evidence of a certain management style, which makes her ineligible to continue in her office.
So in other words, no admission of guilt or culpability or blame is good enough, because the process, your governing process, your management process is tainted. So are you saying, where's the trust in that? Or how does a person rebuild the trust?
Can you rebuild the trust? Some people might say, well, perhaps this is just a cynical political move. Oh, yes, I'll apologize. You know, the Bill Clinton with the tear in the eye type of thing, and then we move on.
That's where we have to have public dialogue and take people to task and ask them the critical questions. You know, the questions that I might ask when I have my trust violated may not be the same, and that's why it's really important to have a community dialogue and make the person accountable. You have to answer to this. You know, the issue, too, and you bring up that thing about those timely, you know, apologies, is what was being said during the time when all this was happening. If a person is manifesting the whole attitude of that I'm not concerned, this is how I'm going to do it, then that kind of gives you maybe an idea of how trustworthy they are. If they have a closed process and they're not trying to invite anyone. If you have a closed process and you're not inviting anyone, but you have an epiphany later, you know, and realize, oh, I made a mistake. You know, how are we going to know if we don't have a dialogue? How are we going to know that this is maybe not business as usual, but maybe just a lapse, or maybe you finally had a broadening of your horizons? Who's to say? You got to have some dialogue. You got to have opportunity to sit down and talk and discuss what's important to you.
You're listening to KBOO More Talk Radio with Celeste and Cecil. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. This is More Talk Radio. We're talking about public trust and public accountability, public and private trust.
And public communication and dialogue.
Public communication and dialogue, which is really important. And need to take place.
Communication and dialogue.
is that a hint for...
Yeah, for our listeners. It's like, you know, don't let the pledge drive. You know, I guess that could be a problem because 3 weeks people didn't get to call in.
Yeah. Let's name. I mean, we mentioned Diane...
Mm-hmm.
Diane Lynn.
Right.
We can mention the
chief of police if you've got somebody who's... That's a good question.
That's a good question.
Okay, well, we won't get too deep on the title.
Okay. Mr. Foxworth.
Yeah, we can call the name.
We have concerns around the whole process around the whole tram issue and city council.
Uh-huh.
We have the President of the United States, the Secretary of Defense.
Uh-huh.
We have the owner of the Trailblazers.
We must have been a psychic because I was just thinking the same thing. You say one thing and then you change your mind and decide it's going to be another. You know, so we deal with the breaking of public trust. We deal with the breaking of personal trust on a regular basis. You know, maybe it's not the kind of thing that people want to talk about because too often, as Cecil and I said, your idea of trust can get caught up in community or cultural values.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe people are afraid to define trust and the breaking of public trust because it gets perilously close to moral or ethical values, and we wrangle too much over how different we perceive our moral or ethical values. But, you know, this whole thing is dialogue. So whether we agree with you or not, you have an opportunity to call in and express yourself and have some conversation. So call 503-231-8187 and get some talk into talk radio.
And if my earphones are working, be able to hear this caller. Good morning, caller.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. And I love your show always. I love the morning shows. And I have a quick question, though.
Mm-hmm.
You were interviewing an author last Monday, and I didn't get her name. Was, I believe, Sharon Smith?
Sharon Smith.
And what was the name of that book?
Subterranean Fire, I believe. I didn't bring any of my notes from that.
Subterranean Fire?
I think it was, I know it was Sharon Smith. And I believe it was Subterranean Fire.
Well, what I was wondering was, and I believe what I heard her say, sometimes we hear things we don't know what we hear, and but it was about something in, was it the National Business Journal, about how things were to change for the American people, and it wasn't a good change.
Mm.
Was that, did she mention that, that they had to package and market some, you know, market this new philosophy and idea to the American people that, you know, we were going to be royally rammed in the back?
Mm.
Well, you know, I got the gist of what she was saying to me, something similar to that. Basically, we kind of talked about working class radicalism in the U.S. and how it was really important that we take hold of the movement, the energy behind the movement for immigration, and address how immigration and labor were intimately linked, and how if we weren't going to do that, it was going to be business as usual, which means we get hit in the back pretty hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been hit in the back pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, that's business as usual, you know.
Yeah, because I believe she said that there was an article referring to this in 1979, and I know that even during Lonnie's first term, I was saying, you know what? We'll be trading places with the Soviet Union, only we'll be under the right wing.
Mm.
And that's kind of where I see where we are now. You know, what are the farms? ConAgra, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, aren't they just the new collective farm? Remember the collective farms in the old Soviet Union?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think that what these, you know, the small farmer is gone, and now we have these huge, our own collective farms, you know, ConAgra, and I don't know what are some of the other names, but, mm-hmm. you know, they're all over the place, and the people are paid just about what the Soviets were paid.
Well, you know... Yep. Not having her here with us, you know,
I know,
puts it as a little bit as a disadvantage. But I would recommend. Have you had a chance to pick up her book yet?
No, I couldn't remember what the.
Okay, yes. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Interview. So that's.
Yeah. Well, it's Subterranean Fire, and it's a history of working class radicalism in the U.S.
Well, we need to radicalize ourselves and get up off that damn couch.
Now, that's part of what she was saying, too.
I've been saying for a long time, you know, we're long overdue for the revolution here. And I don't know. It's just hard to put down the remote, I guess. I don't know. But.
Well, that gives us part of our agenda for this week, then. Radicalize and put down the agenda. Put down the remote. Pick up the agenda and put down the remote.
Pick up the agenda, put down the remote.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Thanks so much. Okay, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, that's Haymaker Press.
Hey, Market.
Haymaker. Wow.
Hey.
Well, make it while the sun is shining. Hey, Market Books.
Oh, Market.
And you can find out more information about Sharon Smith and the book at Hey Market. Haymarketbooks.org. Haymarket is one word. Okay. Haymarket Books is one word. There we go.
You're listening to More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. Restoring trust is our topic this morning, and we have a few calls online.
Yeah, we want to dialogue about how our leaders can restore trust, and can they reconcile the relationships, and then also on a personal level, how do you do it? And so we'll go to our next caller, 503-231-8187. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. You mentioned community values, and it seems to me that as a society and a community, we put such a high value on money that there's no commitment to higher beliefs publicly, and it's really hard for our public figures to concede anything when they feel that they have enough money, which gives them a mandate to act brazenly.
So how do we transform that or change that?
Well, or hold them accountable and make them understand that they are accountable.
By recognizing, my opinion would be recognizing that the true value we have is beyond the monetary systems. Mm-hmm. And that is just turning off the television and the TV ads and all sorts of screaming, angry drivers and getting out in your community and dialoguing.
Well, what a concept.
You know, one of the interesting things is the fact that we have a lot of what we need within our communities to really make the change and see the kind of change we want, but the trick is connecting with each person and learning what kind of resources and value each person has. So as the previous caller said, you know, turning off that television, putting down the remote and picking up the agenda.
And when we leave it to sound bites to have the dialogue, it furthers our plight and just puts public figures further and further from reality, and it doesn't allow them to show their commitment to a higher understanding of the world.
How can our leaders show that commitment, that understanding? I mean, we have our visual and our oral sound bites. You know, you kiss the babies, and that's supposed to be one of those iconic gestures that means that you care about kids, which means probably that you care about families, which might mean that you care about education. You know, so we see these gestures that are designed to give the photo op or the, you know, the visual sound bite. But how do we create that sense that we want more? How do we hold them accountable to giving us more?
Well, traditionally, that was through religion that we were able to express our views and values. And religions become quite unpopular. And now we're all spiritual. And spiritual doesn't have that same weekly connection where we actually have the dialogue. It just has a commitment to a personal set of values. And so until we continue the dialogue, whether that's through religion or through spirituality or whatever, I don't know that we're going to really be able to recalibrate our compass.
Well, thank you for your call, and it sounds as if one of the things you're saying is in terms of searching for an affirmation of community and how do we create, as you mentioned, those community values.
Right. Definitely. Community is the answer.
All right. Well, thank you for your call.
Thanks for the conversation.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO FM, 90.7 in the metro area, 91.9 in the Gorge, 100.7 in the Willamette Valley. And you can join in the conversation, 503-231-8187. We're talking about restoring public trust, reconciliation of public relationships. How can we do that? What do we expect? What do they need to do to make it better? And go ahead.
And give us the answer.
Give us the answer. And we'll go to our next caller. Thanks for holding. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes. I just want to say, when you talk about trust, you know, the Bible is very, very instructive because it tells you that to be weary of anybody that has to swear an oath. Because the Bible say, let your yes be yes and your no be no, and that anybody that have to go through all of that, to mistrust them. So that's biblical. And also, too, I want to say that, first of all, representative government can never bring about a trustworthy situation. Because it's something really profound about a group of people that need a few individuals to direct their course in life. There's something very wrong about that. And also, the two most, when you ask the question about why some people got on Bill Clinton and they let this administration slide, I'm going to tell you why. The two most polarizing forces in America is sex and racism. There ain't no more polarizing forces in this society than those two issues. If sex is involved, people polarize and they move in ways that you never can imagine to bring about a different result. Take the chief police, for example. You know, take Bill Clinton, for example. Or when you deal with racism, Like, look at all those Latinos that organized and they came together. There's no more polarizing force in this society than sex and racism. That's why if these people really wanted this man out of office, they could have been and put him out of office. But you know why he's still there? Because he's not involved in the sex and racism thing, so therefore he can stay there. Because these people ain't going to come together and get rid of him because he's not doing anything to polarize them yet. That's my interpretation of what's going on. Part of it is biblical, and part of it is living it.
With regard to what you said about racism, he's kind of put his foot in that pool. The fact that they had the very slow response to Katrina didn't set well with a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, and on a popular level, you've got people saying that Bush doesn't care about folks of color. Now, specifically, the person who said that doesn't care about black folks, but when you look at how this whole scenario with immigration is being played out, where you've got powerful Republican interests and corporate interests who want to keep, quote-unquote, illegal and undocumented people here so that they can exploit them and pay them nothing, but then the people who are concerned about it also don't step up to the plate and make a difference. It's kind of hard to say that this administration is not mired in racism.
Well, it is, but it is on a different point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It's a racist administration, no doubt about it. Matter of fact, it's neo-Nazi organization. But the racism is being directed in the right way. I mean, they're oppressing people of color around the world. You know, yeah, they were slow to respond. I mean, that's the majority.
That's business as usual.
Yeah, that's business as usual.
Okay.
So they're not going to be upset about that.
Okay.
They're going to be upset if they started moving people of color, man. They started moving upward mobility and giving them, positions of real growth. So to speak. That's what I'm talking about. That's why these people ain't got George Bush out of there. I mean, and you know another thing too that really blows my mind. Check this out. I hear a lot of progressives talk about democratic principles, but yet they're anti-religious.
Mm-hmm.
Now my whole thing is this. The most religious book that ever been printed is the Bible. The Bible promotes democracy. I mean, it promotes democracy like you would never believe. Everything in the Bible is democratic.
Wait. Okay, explain that.
It talks about equality.
Okay.
It talks about...
You're talking about New Testament egalitarianism. You're not talking about Old Testament.
I'm not talking about the Old Testament.
Right.
I'm talking about we're in the grace now, you know.
Right.
So all I'm talking about, the New Testament is one of the most democratic books out here.
Well.
And yet a lot of progressives, anti-religious.
We recently had Rabbi Lerner here talking about how progressives are unable to really grapple with religion. And I think you hit a good point there, and that others have talked about is in terms of progressives and their relationship towards religion and really wrestling with that in a real way. So,
well, of course it is. And that is the major contradiction out here to me is that if they ever really knew that the Bible, the New Testament part, they will understand that it's all about democracy and that Jesus Christ basically was doing the same thing they should be doing. And he came in to change the world. They ain't trying to change the world. Anyway, I got to go.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. And thank you for your call and for your insight. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 on your FM dial. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're talking this morning about public trust, how to restore it, and what is expected of those who are our leaders. We'll go to our next call. Thank you for holding. Good morning.
Morning. My first thing was about the lady talked about collective farms.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right now, there's a proposal, I think, from maybe the guy from Mallory's Dairy near Salem, to put 7,000 cows up in Hermiston. And if that isn't a collective farm, on top of the, what, there's another one up there with 50,000. And, of course, maybe a not too apropos comment. Do you think guest worker program will be initiated to put the people to work manning these big farms? But the other one is about trust.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the Portland School Board. A new superintendent comes out with a plan.
Right.
And I thought that before, you would think that she would have discussed this with the board, and the board would all be on board before she even comes out with the plan.
You would have thought. You know, as a matter of fact, I had a conversation with one of the Portland School Board members yesterday about this, and I guess I could say this person was not very happy.
Oh, so that there wasn't that much discussion with the board.
Well, I think there's more we need to explore about what's happening with the Portland School Board and the superintendent. And I think it's something that we'll be hearing more about.
Oh, okay.
And thank you for raising those issues.
Oh, then there was another one. And this is with the South, waterfront. And the building that's going on
there,
and the money.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
I read the Oregonian. I'm an accountant. Mm-hmm. I couldn't make out who's paying the money, how much money, when is it going to be paid, to whom. And then the article then goes on, well, it's supposed to be recouped by tax, but then nobody really knows when the taxes will kick in. And I thought, does anybody in City Hall have any finance people that can talk to them about numbers? They're always coming up with $200,000 for the farm below, someplace, another $100,000 for this. The school board comes, they find $9 million. Trust means a certain amount of competence. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding it rather lacking.
Mm-hmm. Well, but speaking of City Hall, and I think you raised some several good points in terms of accountability and fiscal responsibility. One thing that I think that city government here in Portland prides itself on is in terms of openness, in terms of accessibility.
Supposedly accessibility in that you can be a part of the process.
You have to be there at the very beginning.
That's true, and the part of it is being able to determine where the beginning is,
right,
and make sure that there's adequate notice, and we hear that all the time.
For the first streetcar project,
mm-hmm,
that I was indirectly involved, you find out on a Monday that they're going to vote on it on Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And the thing was, obviously, of course, maybe it's like the school board. In this case, everybody was on board.
Mm. Unfortunately.
But when they're all on board, then you get mad about that, too.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I have to say.
Hey, thank you for your thoughts, mm-hmm, and continue to raise those questions.
Okay. Yes, and to be involved in the process.
Coming up at KBOO at 9 is the Omo Variety Hour. At 10 is the food show, members of the Northwest Veg Talk about vegetarianism in Oregon. And the food show collective presents a, quote, provocative parlay with the proprietor of Portland's preeminent packer of premium pickles, end of quotation. Say that three times fast, Celeste. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, Air Force Colonel Sam Gardner says a military operation has already begun inside Iran, and he discusses what he calls the unprecedented revolt against Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld within the military, which is a whole other issue. But we do have a few callers online, so let's get to the next one. Good morning, and thank you for waiting.
Well, good morning. How are you guys?
We are well. How are you?
Oh, just wonderful. Thank you very much. Another day in paradise.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so I just got to throw a couple of quick little factoids at you guys.
Okay.
Okay. 78% of the American people think that cronyism and corruption is simply the way that business is done in Washington, D.C.
So that gives license almost.
Right.
Yeah. That says that the collective we think that that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Right, and there's no need for accountability.
No.
And how can you break public trust because there's no benchmark?
Yeah, there is none. There is none. 26% of eligible American voters don't bother to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
If the collective we decide that we're not going to vote, and 78% of the people think, oh well, that's the way it is, how can we hold anybody accountable?
We have met the enemy,
and they is us.
Yeah, the enemy is us.
So
right? we listen to the President of the United States take his inaugurational speech,
uh-huh,
and put his hand on the Bible. Mm-hmm. Here's a man who calls himself a Christian. He puts his hand on the Bible, and he swears that he is going to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America,
mm-hmm,
and our rights are disappearing before our eyes.
So you're saying that possibly one of the reasons why we have such a limited response from people, or a mixed response of people, when it comes to holding our leadership accountable for breach of trust is that we're suffering from learned helplessness. It's happened so often that
absolutely
we don't think it matters to say anything.
That's right.
Well, how would you account for the I'm just throwing this out as devil's advocate.
Okay,
I'm not going to hold you personally responsible for the answer. But how would you account for the increase in whistleblowers then?
I think it's a dog and pony show.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
In other words, it's a distraction. We've got whistleblowers all the time, but it just depends on which ones come to the surface.
Oh, yeah. It's yet another distraction. It's yet another thing to keep us occupied so we don't look at what the real problem is. Right?
Mm. Yeah.
Right. The real problem is that there's no national health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
We have the worst... we have the most expensive and the worst medical system in the world, and it costs people a fortune. All right, minimum wage, federal minimum wage is $5.15 an hour. It hasn't gone up in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but yet in 10 years, the Congress of the United States of America voted themselves.
Quite a few raises.
How about $28,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So as long as they can fractionalize us,
mm-hmm,
keep us at each other, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't focus on what's important, it's a done deal.
Yeah.
They win, we lose. Boom. And until the people of the United States of America decide to get off their ass and do something, all right, do something positive, do something constructive, hold these people who are supposed to be our leaders accountable to a higher standard, then nothing's going to happen.
Okay, and accountability, I mean, it's quite a challenge you laid out for us, because you began the conversation by offering us stats in terms of how disengaged the American public is, and also the call for us to hold them accountable. So we have a lot of work to do.
Yes, we do have a lot of work to do, because unfortunately, no matter how bad things are in America, the stomach is full.
Mm.
And as soon as the stomach stops being full, let's see what's going to happen.
Oh.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I wish we had more time because I have a couple other points, but we're out of time. And I thank you for your call.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a great day, you guys.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You know, if we'd had
stomach
more time.
Stomach is food, and that's food for thought. I'm sorry.
Well, here you go. You know, the other thing, though, I think is really significant is that that particular scenario puts the responsibility on us.
Mm-hmm.
And we should not bear the brunt of the responsibility. We should not, as citizens, be the only ones yes, we are responsible for making sure our leadership steps up to the plate, but I don't think that should just fall on us. I think our leaders should also think in terms of their accountability to us.
You know, we're nearing the end of our hour, but hopefully next week we'll have open forum and we can might be able to continue the conversation. So I want to apologize for those who have called and we are unable to get to, but hold on to your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
Put it on your calendar.
We'll continue the conversation next week.
Most definitely we will. And we want to thank everyone who called. You know, we want to encourage you to call earlier in the show so we have more time to talk with you. We want to thank everyone who called and became a member here at KBOO, especially coming through the doors of More Talk Radio. We really appreciate it. And as we go out, I have a couple of announcements. One of them is for the opportunity to support the Portland Chapter of the Lynx for their education and scholarship fund by participating in the Ebony Fashion Fair show.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a date Friday, April 21st, 8 p.m. at the Oregon Convention Center. The Convention Center is located at 777 Northeast King, and ticket prices are $45 general admission and patron dollars $75. It may seem like a lot, but remember what you're doing is you're supporting the Lynx, the Portland Chapter of the Lynx Education Fund. And they do a lot of work also, not only with getting young people into college, but with HIV and AIDS education awareness. So if you're interested in going, because there'll be no tickets sold at the door, you have to get them now.
Get your outfit ready, too.
Well, yeah, get your outfit ready. For more information, you can contact Yvonne Williams, 503-284-9485. That's 503-284-9485, and there'll be information at the front desk.
Excellent. And any other?
Well, you know, I'm looking at the time, and they'll just have to wait.
We'll wait. Hey, thank you all so much for joining with us this morning, and stay tuned for more provocative...